What's up, you Star Guys and Star Girls? Welcome to Star Guys, a podcast about Star Girl on the CW and DC Universe. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the latest episode of DC Stargirl. Not anybody else's Stargirl. Don't you own her unless you're DC, okay? You own the trademark then, dudes. Stargirl Brainwave. Not yeah. Brainwave Jr., which is next week. This is Brainwave. This is the first one. This is diving into the OG villain for the first two episodes of the show, finally looping back to his origin, which we'll get to in a moment. Before we do, though, a brief bit of recap about what has happened previously on Stargirl. Pete is nodding his head no because he's like, oh, there's so much to get through. I'm not going to interrupt it. Not me, not Pete LePage.
It's his body language. It's hard to nod no. I'll tell you that much. And he does it somehow. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thanks, Pete. So, previously on Stargirl, there are two opposing sides, superheroes and supervillains. The superheroes are the JSA, or more specifically, the Young JSA, the Young Justice Society. A couple of folks in Blue Valley, Nebraska, who have picked up the legacy of previous heroes. Rick Tyler is our man. Yolanda Montez is Wildcat. Beth Chappell is Dr. Midnight. And Courtney Whitmore is Stargirl. Also, Pat Dugan continues to be Stripesy, because that's all he ever was. Wow. He is also Courtney's stepfather. He was on a couple of superhero teams, as we find out, as we'll be talking about in a moment. But he is sort of like very reluctantly helping out the Young JSA now. He's decided to become their mentor. He's coming to his own as that. Not as
he's
the
very much,
of the
I'm
team.
Getting too old for this shit. Is like his
yes, he is.
Basic.
Hey, don't interrupt the fucking recap, man. It'll just take longer.
No, I can't believe you just shut down a good discussion about Danny Glover, Pete. That seems
yeah.
Right
why are you silencing Glover?
Because I'm getting too old for this shit.
For this shit.
So also on the JSA side, or rather on the side of the good folks, we got to mention the rest of the Whitmore Dugan family. That includes Barbara Whitmore, who works at Project New America, a.k.a. The American Dream, which is a revitalization project in Blue Valley, Nebraska. However, it is a front for the bad guys, the ISA, the Injustice Society of America, who are building a machine. We still don't know exactly what it is, though we do get pretty specifically laid out in this episode. But they have all been working together for the past decade on this project. They previously killed the original Justice Society, moved to Blue Valley, masqueraded as prominent members of society, have raised their families there, have kids of their own who have taken on, some have taken on villainous personalities, some have not. And me, all the meanwhile, in the background, they have been building up this plan. A couple of the young ISA that you probably need to know about who are super important in this episode. There's Sydney Berman, a.k.a. Shiv. She has blades that come out of her hand. She is the daughter of Dragon King, an insane scientist, also known as Dr. Shiro Ito. And she hates Courtney so much, but got sucked into the sewer by a bunch of drones last episode. So we pick up with her again this episode. Also, as mentioned earlier, Brainwave Jr., also known as Henry. He is the son of Brainwave. He is developing mental powers of his own while his father is in a coma in the hospital. And we find out a whole lot more about that this episode. The last one you probably actually need to know about is very early on, Icicle, the leader of the ISA, killed William Zarek, a.k.a. the Wizard, and his son, Joey Zarek. And Joey Zarek's death in particular continues to motivate pretty much everything that happens in the plot in a very surprising way.
Yeah, who saw that magician really popping up?
That's the thing, like classic sleight of hand is it's right in front of you and you don't see the trick until it happens. You know what I'm talking about?
That's good. Another great, so he faked his death. Another great thing we need to talk about is that Icicle is single. There's no doubt about that. And we need to just put that out there.
Yeah, we do need to mention that. Last thing we need to mention is there is a kid named Mikey and he likes to eat food.
He sucks.
Fuck you. He's the greatest.
It's weird. He's really only ever food adjacent. Always food. He comes with a
food. I got to be honest. We were like two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through this episode, and I started to get real worried for this podcast because Mikey was not showing up, and I was like, oh, shit, what's Pete going to do? Mikey isn't in this episode, that's literally the only thing he's going to talk about.
And let me throw this out to you. We've never seen Pete fully shaved or not in a long time. He might be Mikey.
Oh, man.
Have you ever thought, have you thought about that?
Huh. So let's jump into the episode. We kick off with a flashback as we have the past couple of episodes, except this one is decades ago. This is before even the ISA versus JSA fight. And we find out what happened with Brainwave back when he was a scientist. He was experimenting on a bunch of mice. We get some creepy mice with
laser
eyes. Mice. That's creepy as shit, man.
Because the thing, most scientists really need that strong green light to red light to know when an animal has passed. And that's how you know you're dealing with some good scientists.
Yeah.
So green he's taking pills. He almost gets robbed in the parking lot, but instead he brains the gun away and kills the robber. And then immediately, as you always do when you murder somebody, puts it on videotape. He confesses it on videotape.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what you got to do for the record. Right?
Who knew he was a vlogger way back in the day? Like, it's great to get that going.
My favorite thing about the tape is where he opened up like, "Hey guys, I think I killed a man tonight. Don't forget to like and subscribe."
Yeah. He was in the running to be the MTV in the VJ search back in the late 90s. It was him and Jesse Camp who were the finalists.
Man, well, that's the thing. Like, when you're, you know, kind of a villain, and you can't have, like, a journal, you know, because you want to stay at the cutting edge of the times, you get a VHS camera and then slowly record every day of your life since you murdered somebody, you know what
That's
I mean?
Pretty good, Pete, but I want to get back to the I want to be a VJ thing because I got a couple more jokes about that. I was really pulling for Brainwave, but I heard that, like, the on the internet, they stuffed the vote at the last second for Jesse Camp, and that's why he lost.
It's fucked up. It's unbelievable. Yeah, Dave Holmes is right there, too. He's pissed. I can't believe I know this much about that, by the way.
That is, I feel like for a certain generation, actually, the I Want to Be a VJ finale is seared in your memory as, like, this horrific thing that you could not believe was happening at the time.
I'm working on a theory that draws a direct line from Jesse Camp winning that contest to Donald Trump becoming president.
Oh, shit.
When you guys are done,
it's a straight line. That's very short.
Yeah. Sorry, Pete.
When you guys are done flexing how old you are, can we get back to the fucking episode?
Oh, wow. I'm sorry, Pete. We didn't all grow up watching the reboot of Beavis and Butthead that hasn't come out yet, like you, who was just bored.
Okay, Mikey, tell us what it's like to skateboard. Is it a cool hanging out with all these star
Tony
geezers?
Hawk. Anyway, so he tapes the tape, and then it turns out it's the present, and Henry is watching. He sees his father's costume. He sees a pic of his mom, has a little bit of a brainwave, and then he starts to watch through all the tapes starting with day one, and this is basically his training montage where he goes through what is up, Pete, what?
Okay, so I really, you know, I like when things are like to be continued and then pick right up where they left off. It was a real nice moment where we saw the tape where he was like, "I killed a guy," and then Henry puts in the tape, picks right up from that spot. That's impressive.
That's great. The note I wrote down
of that lining up like that. I mean, come on.
The note I wrote down after him pulling out all those VHS tapes and having a VHS player is, what is this, Riverdale? Made me laugh at the time. So there.
Well, I think TV really reflects the pulse, and right now the kids are really into the VHS, and television is really repping that hard right now.
Yeah, you hear that, kids? Drop your TikToks. They're owned by China. You pick up VHS tapes instead. You know what I'm talking about?
What was that?
Good old American VHS tapes. Nothing more American than a VHS tape.
You've never sounded more old and more white than that fucking statement there, dude. That was fucking weird.
That classic American company, Toshiba.
Basically, we get a lot of information here. It is a brain dump, a brain wave, if you will, where we find out that the original brain wave, Henry Sr., got these headaches pretty much up until he killed Ben. And then he was fine. He was able to move things with his mind. He's able to manipulate them. Henry plays around with his abilities a little bit as well. As we see later in the episode, he's able to throw a knife in the wall. He's able to make videotapes dance around him. Lots of stuff going on that we'll get to in a moment. But the main thing to take away is this is Henry finally understanding and connecting with his father. In addition, also finding out that Henry's dad, grandfather, was also very mean to his dad and hung him over a well, which my main takeaway from this episode through various things is lots of good parenting advice this week.
Hmm. Okay. So first off, again, creepy wells. All right. People, Pete, if you see wells. A well, stay the fuck away from it.
Here's anytime the thing, Pete, you hate wells, but you love fresh water. What do you do?
You go to a river or a fucking stream or a fountain. Get the fuck away from a well, man.
What I don't understand, though, is you hate wells, but you love cisterns, which is very confusing.
Very confusing. Yeah. Now, so let me ask you.
A toilet's just a well that you poop in.
Oh, that's gross.
That's why I always make a wish right before.
Oh, I don't want to know any details like that.
Alex is making another wish.
I swallow a bunch of petties every day.
Oh,
just
my God. That is awful.
To eliminate the middleman.
Right, I don't even want to touch that. It's a little disappointing because, you know, a lot of people get training montages, but Henry's montage is just like him watching VHS tapes, which, as we all know, is it takes a lot out of you, changing the tape every time. You know, you can't just binge. You know, you gotta take the tape out. You gotta rewind it. Because if you don't rewind the tape after you, that's just a nightmare.
You think
for the
he's
next
be
person.
Kind rewinding?
Yeah, you got to. You can't just.
Yeah. You're the young one on the podcast, Pete.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you're not only talking about VHS tapes, you're complaining about kids using VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So. Over to Courtney. Courtney tells Pat about what happened last episode. There's a big climactic battle where Courtney was fighting Shiv. Henry came up. They could all hear each other's thoughts. Henry didn't know what's going on, and eventually he blasted them, not exactly to safety, but away from each other. So I just want to mention straight off, like, I like what they're doing with the Courtney-Pat relationship now, that it feels like they've come to an understanding. They're a little more equal in the partnership, which is something that we've wanted all along.
Yeah.
And what I like about it is Courtney's established herself as this, like, hopeful, trusting, character, while Pat's the more like, hey, let's slow down and take it easy, which is it flips the sidekick hero relationship in a fun way, I think. It's really, I think Courtney really shines in this episode because of that.
Yeah, I think it's nice because it's like you have the grizzled vet and the, the new person who thinks they can change the world. So it's a fun team up of kind of like, we should do this. And Pat's like, well, the family's evil. If father was evil, he's probably going to be evil. And she's like, no, I read his thoughts. You know, maybe we can turn him to the good side here. So I like the idea that she's fighting for that because with her track record, she stumbled across three heroes very easily. So why wouldn't Henry also be a hero in her world? You know, it makes sense to me. I like this. I can understand where she's coming from.
Well, this is jumping ahead because one of the big discussions of the episode is should they have Henry join the JSA? And we get a pretty clear split here where Beth is like, well, I don't know. Let's think about it. He could be a really good asset. Courtney clearly is completely on board. Rick is like, hell no, that guy's bad news. His dad was bad news, and so is he, which is kind of funny, of course, coming from Rick. He certainly looks to legacy quite a bit. And Yolanda, of course, has, I think, the strongest argument, and certainly the first thing I thought of when they were being recruited, is however it happened, he leaked her nudes, and that is fucked up and unforgivable. And even if they want to make sure it doesn't go bad, he should not be on the team, I think.
Yeah, and also, for the sake he was way too casual. Henry was like, what, are you still mad about that? Like, are you fucking kidding me, dude?
Well, the JSA backstory aside, I feel like this episode does a good job of showing Henry floating between being good or evil throughout the episode.
And what sucks is the male nurse pushed him over to the dark side. Like, he was like, mm-hmm. you know, Courtney gives him this big talk, like, hey, you got to look deeper. People are better. It's about love. And then the fucking male nurse shows up and is thinking horrible thoughts. And then he's like, fuck it, I'm evil.
I'll just mention it's just Nurse Pete.
That's a good point. My bad. Yeah.
No, sorry. Right. Pete lives in inside the Robert De Niro classic movie, Meet the Parents.
Hey, Pete, I have nipples. Can you milk me?
I wouldn't want to.
Oh, okay.
What if it was the last source of milk on Earth? Alex's nipples.
Die.
Yeah. What if you really wanted ice cream? What if you really wanted a milkshake? I will say the milk that comes out of Alex is pre-shaken.
It's true. I'm always jumping around. So then we get a bunch of a really cool Easter eggy backstory for comic book fans, but something that, of course, is going to pay off on the show both immediately and I think long term as well. We get a whole long scene. Pat explains that Dr. Ito is also known as the Dragon King. He and Sylvester Pemberton, a.k.a. the original Starman, were both in a team called the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Now, if you're not familiar with them from the comics, they, like he describes, predate the JSA and the Justice League. And they were really, in comics, one of the first attempts to be like, let's take these single characters and throw them together on a team.
Yeah.
And it didn't really work.
Here come a bunch of weirdos that don't have anything in common.
Right. And I thought this whole scene was very fun with Courtney appropriately pointing out, like, you got a cowboy and, like, other dudes. Yeah, what is going on?
The
here?
YMCA dig was a little much, Courtney. You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah. But we do get a couple of characters established beyond Stripesy and Starman. We find out about Shining Knight, who, if you've been paying attention to the show, you know what's going on there. The Vigilante, Crimson Avenger, and Wing. And there's at least, my count is off, but I think there's like two more there because, as they mentioned, there's eight members, even though there's seven.
There's seven, yeah.
And I feel like the joke there is that Stripesy wasn't part of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was he's always been a sidekick, and now the fact that he's still sidekicking for a teenager is, I hope they actually reconcile or deal with that in a fun way. But I like the idea of an older sidekick. It flips the script.
Me too. And the last little detail we got is that Dr. Ito built a living weapon to destroy New York. They beat him, and then they all lost touch, and he's wondering where they are. Maybe
that line was crazy. I lost touch with him.
Huh. Yeah.
I really wish I knew where they were. Cut to creepy janitor.
Yes. Well, and I do think, like, beyond the janitor, we're going to see more members of the Seven Soldiers of Victory going forward. That, to me, feels like a further down the road thing. But yeah, as you mentioned, yes, we get the janitor. He's mopping up. His mop begins to glow. It turns out it's the cosmic staff, but it's not. He drops it, and it's just his mop. So clearly some stuff is going on in his brain that we'll be dealing with in, I want to say, approximately two episodes' time.
But that's a classic janitor who doesn't sleep hallucination. As we establish, he's working both the day and night shift. And any janitor is going to start to imagine magic mops.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with all those cleaning products around, you're going to see flowing mops all day. Yeah.
You mix that ammonia and bleach, man, it's the ultimate high. And then it also kills you.
So over to Cindy's house, where Beth is using her Dr. Midnight goggles. It's completely empty. Cindy has withdrawn from Blue Valley High, but in fact, she's being held in prison in the sewer by her dad. Again, another great parenting tip.
Yeah.
She complains about Courtney and Henry. And again, we've talked about this the past couple of episodes, but like the relationship between Shiv and Dragon King is so good. The way that they play it out with the father-daughter thing, but they're both fucked up at the same time.
Agree. Yeah, a lot of great things with that. But first, I'm sure you guys got threatened as children to be thrown into the dungeon with Grundy, right? Like that, to me, it was like, okay, there's a timeout, you know, but then there's the Grundy cell block. So I feel like that's always a good thing to have in the back pocket if you're a father.
Yeah. Are you spanking your children? Are you Grundying your children? Was the big debate.
Yeah, exactly.
Growing up.
Well, I do the other thing that Dragon King does. When they get a little too wild and start using their blades to try to open the doors, I just gas them.
Yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious. He he admits that he gassed her as a baby. Again, yeah, great
father
tips. Hilarious
is maybe not the right word, but yes, he does that. We also get confirmation that she, in fact, killed her mom, which they've been dancing around for the past couple of episodes, which is pretty upsetting. I'm going to guess it was an accident, like something that happened to her when she was a kid.
She accidentally shivved her mom?
I would think tantrum. I think it's tantrum. Mm-hmm. So you can call that an accident.
I would call that an accident, yeah.
You think so? No. I guess, anything you do when you're angry is an accident?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Wow, Pete, you disagree?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if you're ever hauled in for murder, first thing you're going to say to the judge is, in my defense, I was angry.
I don't know if that's a defense. It's a fact.
How quickly do you go to plead insanity, Pete? Like, first thought, third thought?
No, I own my rage. Also, it's hard to take you seriously, Justin, when you're rocking in a rocking chair while you're talking to us. Can you whittle as well?
I'm enjoying this mint julep on a porch. How am I not going to rock?
This is really unbelievable.
Well, back in my day, a VHS tape, it was one of those round things that spun around that you shine light through that I'm blanking the name on.
You talking about a zoetrope?
Oh, a zoetrope. Oh, there you go. The original VHS tape.
Now we got these hard light holograms we're generating and we interact with.
Why, just the other day, I pretended to be Sherlock Holmes.
Will I Am stops by a lot in holograph form, of course.
Pete, are you loving this?
Nope.
Great.
You started it. My brother.
We get that conversation from earlier at this point where the group discusses whether they should let Brainwave in. Yolanda leaves. She's super pissed off. She's like, I'm not going to be in the JSA if she's with him. And, you know, she's right.
Yes.
She should not be there.
Well, that's what I liked about this episode. This episode positioned everybody in perfectly true spots against each other. I thought that was really well done.
Pete, is that they're putting Henry on a team with Yolanda is wrong.
I thought you said Wildcat doesn't deserve to be on the team, and I was very angry.
Yes, I know. That's why I was clarifying so we didn't fight the rest of the episode. Cool. So then we get a lot of explanation about what is going on in Brainwave's head and the motivation for Henry going forward. Basically, Brainwave read everybody's minds and everybody had terrible thoughts. He killed a man who had awful thoughts about a woman, but then found out everybody had bad thoughts. And his ultimate conclusion is, at their very core, people are monsters. I hate them. Now,
yes, Henry, I would also argue, though, he also was suddenly associated that killing someone relieved his brain headaches. Mm, yes. His brain aches.
But also, like, it's weird to me that you're judging people on their thoughts. You can have bad thoughts, but that doesn't make you a bad person. It's the people who act on bad thoughts, you know?
Well, that's what Courtney says to Henry later on. That's her whole speech to him.
Well, she says that, like, she's talking about, like, you have to dig deeper into thoughts and, like, really see the love there, which is a different point. I'm saying, yeah, so what if I walk around fantasizing about punching everybody in the face that I walk by? That doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It just means maybe I have some issues in my head. That doesn't mean outside I'm doing anything wrong.
Now, Pete, real quick, are you talking about a character in the show, or have we dipped into any sort of personal?
I'm just trying to give an example, some real
hypothetical
examples.
Example.
Yeah.
Mm. Good. Hypothetical.
Cool. Any other things that hypothetically you might be imagining lately?
I don't think that's a good idea, but I just think that it's weird that all of a sudden, just because you can read thoughts, that doesn't encapsulate who the person is. You can have random weird thoughts all the time. That doesn't mean you're a bad person.
Well, in the JSA, they have this discussion of, like, can people change or are they set in their ways? And I think that's sort of the thoughts versus actions is another iteration of that same argument. And, I mean, we'll talk about this in a minute, but the episode falls pretty hard on one side of that.
Yes. Well, I think I think we could kind of keep going and talk about this now. I do think that's the difference between superheroes and supervillains, you know, that, like, a superhero is somebody who believes, okay, these are bad thoughts that somebody has, but that isn't the whole of the person. There can be more to them. And the supervillain, which is Brainwave, for example, is like, people have bad thoughts. They're bad. And whether he associates it or not, it's the continued, the dot, dot, dot is like me, who is also bad. So he's using it as, like you were saying, Justin, a way of propelling his bad behavior, his terrible behavior forward.
And I also think this plays into the ISA's ultimate plan, which is involving some machine where they can like broadcast the mind control across six states, I think they said. I feel like they're trying to create a world where they are the arbiters of what is good and what is evil. And because they themselves are evil, it no matter what their intentions are, because I do think Icicle has some like quote unquote good intentions with whatever this evil plan is, but it is inherently evil because they themselves have no moral center.
Yes.
Well, that's weird that you talk about Icicle like that, because he straight up killed the musician and his son, and it seems like he didn't, you know, he didn't need to do that.
I agree, but he still thinks he has good intentions. He thinks that he's killing them to further a purpose because they're about to expose or bail on their big plan, and they're trying to create a utopia for like the next generation or whatever. But he's still evil, but he still thinks he has good intentions.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit in, I think, the last episode, or we've talked about this a couple of times in different ways, but the members of the ISA all have different levels of morality. Like, at this point, Sportsmaster and Tigress are essentially, parody is the wrong word, I'm blanking on the word, but they're like, they're very broad. They're basically like, ah, we like doing evil crimes, yay, crimes! Crimes are cool, and that's pretty much the level that they're at. Gambler, I think, is also kind of at that level, maybe even a little more sadistic. Fiddler, we don't know about yet. Dragon King clearly is like, give me more bodies to experiment on, and including my daughter. Yeah. And that's all he loves. But to your point, Justin, Icicle is a little more nuanced than that. He is trying to do things to protect America, to protect his family, but he has no moral compunctions about killing people or doing whatever he needs to do to get his goals. And that's where he goes wrong.
I agree with you, though. I think you're missing out on the gambler. I think he is more evil than you're giving him credit, because he also littered. And that is just fucking ridiculous.
That's truly the most evil thing. And another thing we should talk about is Icicle's insane hotness and heat that he has with Barbara, that we see a great deal.
No, let's not jump the fucking shark yet. Okay, one thing I would like to point. One thing I would like to point out, though, is
is that a fuck shark?
I don't. So one thing I would like to talk about, though, is Icicle doesn't seem to be putting his evil shit on his son. It seems like the son is kind of like excused from all of Icicle's fucking madness.
Well, I think that's based on what we're about to get to in a second, a question going forward, right? Like, I think certainly from the perspective of the audience, we feel like Cameron is a good kid who is not involved in anything that's going on with Icicle, but we don't really know 100% for sure. That could be a twist later on, but it's not confirmed either way.
And what do we think about the Icicle's parents? Like, pretty cool people? Or you think they're at all evil?
Why would you say that?
They're evil at all?
They are the most, like, that Hitler evil prayer moment was kind of the creepiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I was like, that's confidence to be like, no one here speaks Danish. Let's say our evil prayer.
But first, though, we do get a meeting from the ISA, which I kind of felt like was sort of unintentionally funny, just because of all the sitting down, standing up business, where Dragon King comes in. They're like, hello, Dragon King. And he says, it's Dr. Ito, please. Yeah. Which was...
It was goofy. Pleasant. It felt like an Elks club in a good way, where it's just like, look at these dudes being dumb with each other.
But also, like, the Dragon King's, like, little puppets were, like, having a hard time walking and moving around, which was kind of funny to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think the show is going for that, right? They are supposed to be, like, not goofy, but right on that line between goofy and evil. Yeah, exactly. Yes, so that whole thing where he's like, may I sit down? And then he sits down and then he's like, he stands up to deliver the news immediately. Yeah. It's just a silly bunch of business. But he explains to them, as you mentioned earlier, that Henry Jr. is a telepath, so they could use his powers. The amplifier could broadcast six states. I didn't completely check them, but it seemed like six very unpopulous states to me.
Yeah.
What?
Like, they're going to get after Kansas, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to get, like, six very low population states, you know?
That's six states, man. It's, you know, I don't know what the population is.
Well, all I'm saying is, like, start at California or something, right? There's a lot of people there. Go to New York. There's a lot of people there. Texas.
You got to know, you do it, if you do it in those states, you'd kind of take over states that nobody's really like, oh, okay, I can take over this state, maybe no one will notice, make a little bit more noise in another state, slowly take over. So then when you tack like New York or California, the bigger states, you've got more people and you can really make a dent.
We should play Risk. There's a couple different strategies flying around here.
Yeah.
Pete feels like
Risk
an Australia
Castle
guy.
Risk.
Pete wants to us hook up in Australia and slowly move out. Well, Alex is like, I'm going to take North America and just bomb ass in every direction.
I mean, that was how I played. So there we go. All right. So at that point, we do get
There's,
yes,
so
what?
Like a vampire has to ask to come in, a dragon has to ask to sit down. You can't just, if you're a dragon, you can't just sit down at a table. You have to ask. That's just
that is a very famous thing about dragons, dating all the way back to Arthurian legend. A dragon may take a damsel, but it must ask to sit.
Yeah.
Well, this is why Arthur founded the Round Table, right? Because he wanted to keep all the dragons away, and they were always trying to. They were always after his lucky chairs.
Oh boy.
Yep. That's 100% true.
There we go. That was too many things at the same time. All right, so Jordan at this point is looking at some files of some men, clearly the men that helped kill his wife, most likely, I believe. When Barbara enters, she apologizes for abruptly leaving last episode.
When Courtney was in the hospital,
he says she has absolutely nothing to apologize for. And he gives this very sweet explanation about how the project cost him time away from his son, but it doesn't feel a sense of accomplishment. His wife would cook him dinner after he finished a big project, but she's gone. So Barbara invites him over for a sexy dinner just for two.
Barb, what are you doing, Barb? First off, I would like to say something to Justin. He always complains that there's no magic between him. When they hugged, when Pat and Barb hugged and Pat was going to tell her everything, there was some sparks flying.
You're right. That was just residual heat off the Barbara icicle. She was like just running hot. And she's like, I guess I'll hug Pat. Mm-hmm. And that's what you saw, Pete. But what we really got going on here?
It's like the scene at the oven with Courtney and Pat when she's like, feel the heat coming from the oven. And he's like, it doesn't seem that strong anymore. Same sort of thing. It was a whole metaphor for.
It's definitely a metaphor. And Icicle, like, knows what's up. So, of course, for his big date, he brings over his parents and his son.
That creepy approval shit was really fucking weird at the end of that night.
Yeah. Now, we very briefly get a nurse, gender not determined, comes in, checks on Brainwave. The nurse thinks about never liking him. He's been in there for months. They should terminate life support. At which point, Henry falls on the side of all people are monsters and takes his dad's hand. Now, back to a scene I'm sure Pete liked quite a bit because it's at the pit stop. Yes, Pete.
Okay, so first off, I understand, like, not liking Henry. Like, that's definitely, if I was a nurse, I would be like, yo, you fucking suck, dude. You're a piece of shit. But then going to that person and be like, yo, you should get this guy of life support, I felt like it was a little extra step that I wasn't on board with the nurse there. So I was a little disappointed in that nurse for that part.
Well, it's just an everyday thing for that nurse. It's like, Pete, you love Subway meatball subs, but if you had to make them all day, every day, you'd be like, fuck this sandwich.
Oh, interesting. All right. Or I would be like making them and also eat, like make one, eat one. You know what I mean?
You would drown in meatballs, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you do like a Lucy Ricardo type situation with it coming down the conveyor belt?
Yeah, showing that age, bro. Flex.
There's the true Stargazer. There's the true Stargazer.
That was a black and white TV show, you old as fuck guy.
Well, now I used to watch it on my Zoetrope. So at the pit stop, Pat is looking at some enormous books. Rick and Beth come in to talk to Pat. Rick thinks it's a classic anti-Pat plan to recruit Henry. Yeah. Fun line there. But Pat has figured out that there is a tunnel network in Blue Valley.
Smart.
That is probably why the ISA came there. And he's also realized that the ISA has been there on purpose. They were not running away. They were trying to hide here. They were trying to come up with a plan here. So he puts Rick and Beth to work, says part of being a superhero is actually doing the work, which I thought That's was right. a great lesson. But Rick, of course, is like, no, I'm going to do some other work. I'm Aaron
work.
Paul in Breaking Bad, basically. That's my voice, bitch.
Yeah. Nice.
Yes. So he's going to crack the code in his dad's journal. I don't think we check back in with him at all later, but I assume that'll come into play next episode. Yeah. At which point, we get a great scene with Courtney visiting Henry at the hospital. Even though I'm anti-Henry joining the JSA, I thought the whole way this was played out was really good. We talked about the conversation a little bit before, but one of the great lines, she says, behind the pain and fear, it's all about love. People want love and to be loved, which I thought was great.
I thought it was really cool the way she checked him. She was like, nah, you've got it wrong. You're just looking on the surface, man. Shit goes deeper than that.
Yeah. It was a real philosophy lesson, straight out of Moulin Rouge, armchair philosophy, and she gives it to him hard.
Well, she's like, stop being so surface, stop looking for excuse to be evil. Fucking, love is where it's at, you piece of shit.
Yeah. That's,
I also like the, what eventually pushed them over the edge, though, the fact that she was like, I can't imagine what it would have been like to have him as a father. And he's still got his father's back, even after all of this, showing how tight those family bonds are, plus maybe the abuse and the gaslighting that's happened from his father as well. So it's all very sad and fucked up, but it's played off in the right way. And then we get that big dinner. Barbara's making family dinner for eight. She's freaking out. Pat says he's going to help, but he's got to tell her something first. Courtney stops him, says, yes, I have to tell you I failed a history test. Tells him not to say a word. He's like, no more lying. Which sets up the end of the episode. We'll get to it in a moment. At which point, as we mentioned, the whole Ma Kent's family comes over. Courtney's very excited to see Cameron. Jordan likes their house. What I loved about this dinner, and Pete, I know you're going to hate this, but like the dynamic was basically Pat being like, well, I'm the beta guy here now. All right, take it away, Jordan. You're the father of this whole family.
Well, yeah, he gave up the goat very fast.
Well, first off, we got to back up the truck a little bit. When you open the door and there's that kind of like a shot where it's like the American flag and like this fucking whole family there, that was a nice kind of like dark evil shot that was kind of crazy that I really liked. I want to give a shout out to. And I also want to talk about how, Barb probably pulled Mike aside and it's too bad that, there isn't like a longer version of this episode that we could watch because I'm sure it was cut out and it's probably gold where Barb was kind of like, listen, Mike, you got to fucking take it down a notch. All right. There can't be any fucking volcanoes. You can't be like throwing fucking candy in the ceiling or whatever you're going to do. You've got to be cool because we're bringing over this evil ass family to eat with us. And to Mike's credit.
And Mikey was like, but Barb, I got this boiled chicken log flume thing I want to do where the chicken comes in. Hey,
I'm catapulting fucking chickens over here. So I think that I was impressed with Mike in this episode because he knows when to turn it on and when to turn it off. And when you're around some evil Hitler family, you turn that shit fucking off.
I think the lesson here is that Mikey really grew up in today. And we're going to really see that play forward. He was going to be a totally different person next episode and not just same old Mikey.
No, Mikey's
going to
be Mikey in the greatest way, but he also knows when there's fucking evil people afoot and he's got to turn it down a bit.
It's crazy that you're saying all this when the one thing that he did in the episode is they were like, Jordan, would you like some more chicken and dumplings? And he says, yes, I would love some more chicken and dumplings. Mikey's like, great. Takes them, scoops them, puts them out of his own plate like a total asshole.
Hey, that's Mikey turning it down for you. If you can't handle Mikey at a two, you're fucked.
Wow. Yeah, because normally he would jump up on the table and throw his feces at the guests.
Well, I don't know about that, but he definitely chucked some dumplings.
I kind of want to put, if you can't handle Mikey in a 2, you're fucked, on like some sort of motivational poster.
Yeah.
Put it in offices.
Mikey everywhere. Doing, Mikey, a picture of Mikey doing double guns right at the camera.
Yeah.
I'll see what I can do about that. Very brief scene in the middle there, though. We get Henry in the hospital. Yolanda in full costume attacks him. Nobody has any pretense that there's any sort of secrets at this point, which yeah. I kind of like. Like, I like Me sort too. Of just moving past it. And going for it, but real rough. And she's like, you stay away from me, you stay away from Courtney, you stay away from family, yeah. or I will kill you.
Yeah. Straight up.
Yeah, he, and he was trying to be nice in that moment. So I think he keeps wavering back and forth between this on this good-evil metric, and he's coming off the Courtney bump of like, oh, I can be good. And then she's super harsh to him with good reason. He's trying to be nice, and that pushes him back toward the what happens at the end of the episode.
Now, we do get a thing that I really liked how this was directed and the fact that it was really not scored at all. We get Courtney taking the dish out of the oven. There's more chicken and dumpling. It's super hot. She brings it over to Jordan, and Jordan immediately picks it up. And the whole thing, like, they could have moved through that very quickly, but I appreciated the fact that they spent time to build the tension there, just have her bring it over, no music below it, and just have this realization slowly come over her. I thought that was very nice.
I agree. Yeah, it was a great detective moment for her and very superheroic, I thought.
And I also like the distraction of him like looking up, so not really paying attention to what he's doing. But I also wondered if he kind of did it on purpose to be like, you know, like, what are you going to do about it? You know what I mean? I'm fucking icicle.
Yeah. Well, and then she also gets the realization, as we mentioned earlier, that if Jordan is icicle, as she tells Pat, then does that mean Cameron is also a bad guy? So let's touch back on that. What do you guys think? Is he a bad guy, or is he just like a nice guy that icicle is keeping out of this?
It seems like he's his own. Yeah, he gets to kind of operate separate from icicle. Because he doesn't seem as cold as his father and as evil and as douchey and not so much of a homewrecker. You know what I mean?
I want to think that too. And I sort of felt that way for the most part. But I think it's going to be a reveal that he is evil going forward. I think he and Courtney will get a little closer. And then I think he will betray her. Because the thing with Icicle and his son is they're together constantly. Like, he does like to spend time with them. We saw that dinner scene of them. Like, I don't know. I think he's going to end up being bad.
No. That would be very sad, though, if it does happen. But Jordan likes Courtney. He has a very ridiculous, like, pregnant pause thing where, like, I know about you. That you're a good girl. See you later. And then leaves.
That was Simpsons-esque in its play out, I thought.
Yes. And then we get a very big scene that kind of changes everything. She runs downstairs. Pat is there. She gets the staff. Thinks he can recognize Icicle's scent so that they can confirm that it is, in fact, him. When Barbara comes downstairs, sees the staff, says, what the hell is that? How are they going to get out of this
Barb
one, guys?
Barb knows. This is great. I don't want to dance around this anymore. Stop lying to your wife, Pat. This is great. You got to fucking... You got to be on the same page.
Stop lying to your roommate. That's also your wife, Pat.
Yeah. Fuck you for saying it like that. I think it's.
Well, here's the thing, though. I just want to add that, like, if Barb gets really pissed at Pat about this, they might continue to sleep in separate beds in separate rooms.
Fuck you. I mean, what are you even doing? Wow. Whose side are you on? Are you rooting for Icicle, you piece of shit?
I mean, kind of. They do have a lot of chemistry.
Oh, who gives a shit? He's evil.
Barbara's like, hey, came home from work. Are we having dinner? I don't even care. Versus like, oh, God, my boss is coming over. I love him so much. I have to cook the most wonderful dinner.
It's your boss. There is a certain thing to that, you fucking asshole.
I guess.
Yes.
I don't know. I would never invite my boss home for dinner, first of all.
Yeah.
What a weird thing for people to do.
Exactly. Awful. Like, I don't know. I invited Pete over for dinner and tried to do the best I could to make a good meal.
Yeah, but you set up a date at the same time, right?
That's true, yeah. And we eventually got Jedi married.
All right, can we move on to the next thing?
Yes, absolutely. So in the hospital, Henry is approached by his father's attorney. I think we could say male attorney. Is that correct, Pete?
Yep.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And he says that he left instructions if he was on limited brain function. But it turns out the lawyer needs money. He thinks about it. He faked the papers. It's all right there on the surface. Henry gives the lawyer a seizure, at which point Brainwave walks up, says, "Junior, what's going on?" Yeah. Huge cliffhanger. What do you think?
That's just the classic thing you do. Anytime you know, somebody's in a coma, if you sacrifice an evil lawyer, they will wake up. That's just 101.
That's classic med school training right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. It seems like Brainwave, it seems shocked of what's going on with Henry. He's not like, of course, the powers I anticipated on you inheriting from me. So do we have a thing in the ISA that they were meant to shelter their children and not have them involved in it, and they're trying to create this utopia where they can raise them and have normal lives, and Dragon King went rogue and did what he did? Or is it more the other way? Go ahead.
Because Brainwave was testing his son. He was pissed that his son didn't have his powers. He wanted his son to have powers. I think it's just, you know, the fact that he's coming out of this coma, there's a lot he's missed, and then he's just kind of like, what is this a dream? Is this real? Because I'm sure the father has been daydreaming about his son taking his powers and murdering evil lawyers.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if, like, once he finds out that Henry is going to be hooked up to whatever this machine is instead of him, if he'll back off a little bit, if we'll get a little humanity off of Brainwave. I also wonder if he's going to have his memory or anything like that. Not that it matters that he knows that Courtney is Stargirl, because everybody knows that Courtney is Stargirl.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing, because next episode is titled Brainwave Jr., is we're going to get a resolution on which side Henry falls on. And I feel like ultimately it's going to be the good side, even though he's still going to end up hooked up on the machine.
Yeah, I think because he's going to realize, as much as he, like, his dad in a coma seems cool, but when his dad gets out of the coma, he's going to realize how much he hates his dad, and he's going to go against his dad. But, you know, right now, while his dad's in a coma, he's kind of fighting for him, because he's hoping maybe a new dad will emerge, a nicer dad that isn't a complete fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm. So a coma can change.
A new dad has emerged.
Let's hope so, man.
Select
maybe
your
dad. Maybe a coma
dad.
Doom good.
Ready, dad.
Before we wrap up here, who was... Yes, Pete.
I just want to say real quick before we get to that part, the music in the show, and also the lack of music at certain points, has been really phenomenal. Mm. And I love the use of "Insane in the Membrane" by Cypress Hill.
I was surprised you didn't bring that up. I thought for sure you were going to love that "Insane in the Membrane."
I did, and I did.
So, who is the star of the episode? Pete, we'll start with you. I assume Cypress Hill is your answer.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know. I kind of want to say the cosmic staff in this episode, you know, paired with the janitor, which I was excited about.
And you liked that the staff exposed itself to Barb?
I'm going to go with the Dragon King, because Mike's the obvious answer, but I really liked how Dragon King felt comfortable in his parenting enough to reveal that, yeah, you know, you can gas your kids when they're young and they don't know any better, you know?
Nice. Justin, what about you? Who was the star of the episode?
I got to give it up for Courtney. I mean, I thought she had a great episode of the way that she really was both a great superhero, a great friend, really someone trying to bring out the best in people. This is the episode where I really was on board her choices and confidence in being a hero, both sort of in and out of quote unquote costume.
I'm going to give it up for Henry, which I feel like is kind of an easy one, but the moral quandary he was going through all episode was really well played out. The discussions were good. Yeah. It gets to the core of, like we were talking about, superhero versus supervillain, and I felt it was strong overall, and I'm excited to see what plays out next episode. I wasn't quite sure, given that this episode was Brainwave, but there was so much focus on Brainwave Jr., why we were stretching this over two episodes. But I feel like I have a better sense of that now, and I'm excited to see what's next.
I would have said Henry, but I didn't believe, like, he knew too quickly what to do with the VHS tape and the player. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way a younger kid would just be able to walk into a weird closet and know that right
away. Oh, yeah. You'd want to be, like, some sort of, like, Kids React thing. Be like, well, yeah, what is
this? How do you... Yeah, Siri play... Day one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like when the first archaeologists found dinosaur bones, they were like, what is this giant human?
If you want to support our podcast, if you want to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. Ask us questions about Stargirl. We would love to chat with you live. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. Star Guys Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Star Guys, Star Girls, gender doesn't matter. We'll see you next time.